From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. After weeks of refusing to release its list of taxpayer-backed loans through the Paycheck Protection Program, the Small Business Administration, under the U.S. Federal Treasury this week, made public the tens of thousands of companies that applied for and received loans to survive the coronavirus-related economic disaster. The loans were administered by banks, many of them big banks, that favored their big clients over smaller ones, even though the program was ostensibly aimed at small businesses. Although tens of millions of jobs were saved through the PPP program, millions of Americans remain jobless. Meanwhile, the media has focused on how large corporations, publicly traded firms, politically connected companies, and even some anti-government groups received loans. My guest is David Dayan. He is the executive editor of The American Prospect. His work has appeared in The Intercept, The New Republic, HuffPost, The Washington Post, The LA Times, and more. His first book was called Chain of Title, How Three Ordinary Americans Uncovered Wall Street's Great Foreclosure Fraud. It won the Studs and Ida Terkel Prize. And his forthcoming book, out in just a few weeks, is called Monopolized: Life in the Age of Corporate Power. His latest article in The American Prospect is called The PPP Witch Hunt is Misplaced. And he joins me to discuss it. Welcome, David.
Oh, thank you for having me.
So first, how important was it for the public to get access, for journalists to get access to this list of loans? Much was made about the fact that Steven Mnuchin said this was proprietary information, even though, of course, those loans were being backed by taxpayer dollars.
Well, I mean, I think transparency in general is a nice and important principle. It's important to understand the context here. We only got the loan information for companies who received loans of $150,000 or more. And I should, as full disclosure, say the Prospect was one of them. We got a loan of about $170,000, to make sure we didn't have to lay anybody off. That only took into account about 600,000 of the 5 million people, 5 million businesses who received loans. So there are about 4.2 million loans that were under $150,000 in value that we know nothing about. And it kind of distorts a little bit this record, because the 660,000 we do know about are the biggest loans. And so they involve the biggest companies that have the most employees on staff. All of them have under 500 employees, because that was the cutoff for being called a small business. But so we're distorting the lens a little bit here. We don't have any information on the millions of really tiny micro businesses that did get some form of relief through this program. And because we don't know about them, we can't really administer the program very well, because we just don't have that baseline information.
Now, the American Prospect could be considered a small business, but there are some very large businesses that got very large loans. Many of these businesses have investors that have the ability to pour money into their businesses to save those jobs that these companies appear concerned about. Do you think that the legislation was written with far too many loopholes?
I think the legislation was written with a problematic delivery mechanism. So instead of sending these loans through payroll companies or having the government take them in and process them and send out the payments, they were run through these private banks. And because they were considered loans, and the way that the Small Business Administration works is that it guarantees loans that are made by private banks, they did the same thing in this case. And banks then used the program to favor clients that, A, they had an existing relationship with, so they wouldn't have to do any further compliance duties. So it was really just the fees were free money. And two, clients they could make money off later. And you're not going to make a lot of money off of a sole proprietor that has a micro business selling stamps or selling whatever. You might be able to make money off a business that has 500 employees and might need financial services in the future. And so it's very clear, and it was clear as far back as April, that banks favored those larger businesses that they had existing relationships with. And it's just bad to use these private self-interested banks as an intermediary for federal benefits. We saw this during the financial crisis when we had the foreclosure mitigation program. It was called the Home Affordable Modification Program, or HAMP. And it was run through private banks, which at their discretion decided who to make loan modifications to. And they used it to trap borrowers and extract as much money as they could out of them. So we already knew that this was problematic, this mechanism. And we just saw it run all over again with respect to PPP. Now, as far as did these larger firms, and not the largest firms in America, only up to 500 employees, the largest firms in America have a completely opaque bailout from the Federal Reserve right. that we don't talk about at all. But these larger, smaller businesses, if you're talking about them, they received these loans that are supposed to go directly back out to payroll. Maybe you could say, oh, there are more deserving businesses at the smaller end of the scale. And by taking this money, the larger businesses crowded out the smaller businesses. Well, that would be true if there was no money left in the PPP program. But in fact, there's about $120 billion left in the program. It's the delivery mechanism. The banks aren't interested in giving these loans to smaller groups that they don't make much money off of in fees and don't expect to make money off of in the future. So when we start engaging in, what I kind of call a witch hunt and try to force these larger businesses to give back the money, we're just taking money out of the economy. And we're actually putting the employees of these smaller businesses at risk. So if you think about a 500 employee chain of restaurants, like a small chain of restaurants, you're talking about busboys, waiters, the maitre d's and things like that, who all now have their livelihoods threatened because there aren't very many sales and they didn't get this money from the government. The larger business, after pressure, had to give it back. So I worry about those workers who happen to be at these larger businesses, if their investors won't comply and we pressured them into giving back federal money, what are they going to do? So. Well- that's my problem.
It was the conditionality of saving jobs strict enough? The Washington Post said that nearly 90,000 companies in the program took the aid without promising on their applications that they would rehire workers or create jobs. And of course, that begs the question, why did the banks that they were applying through for these loans allow them to get away with it, with not specifying it? But why did that happen? I mean, should that not have been a strict condition of taking the loan?
Well, it was a condition for the forgiveness of the loan, right? So if you wanted this loan to be turned into a grant and it basically becomes free money from the government, then you had to guarantee that you weren't going to fire anybody and that the money would go to payroll. If you didn't guarantee that, then it just becomes a loan. But it's a very low interest loan, only about 1%. And for some of these companies, that was probably very acceptable. It was better than any kind of loan they could get from a bank in any other way. And the bank is happy with it because not only do they get the processing fee from the Small Business Administration, but they get interest. It's 1% interest, not very much, but they get money for servicing the loan. So this was sort of win-win. Now, when you say that 90,000 number, it sounds like a lot, but there were about 5 million of these loans made. So you're talking about a very small percentage of the overall number, about less than 1/50th, about 2%, under 2% of all these loans were done in that fashion where they were not saved. And those were just not converted into grants. They will stay as loans, and they're just small loans that businesses can get. I think there are a ton of ways that you could have done this program better. The best way would have been to do something like they did in Denmark, where the government assumed the responsibility for paying out everybody's payroll. And so the payroll company, like your ADP or whoever, would just bill the government after they pay everybody's payroll out. This would keep people connected to companies, and it wouldn't, this is the crucial point, it wouldn't have forced businesses to bring workers back prematurely, in many cases, to do work for them because they're paying for it out of these funds. So if we just protected payrolls at a universal level, and what we did instead was we had this boosted unemployment system that incentivized companies to throw people onto unemployment, and now we have this big unemployment problem. If we just would have guaranteed everybody's payrolls, unemployment would have remained low. People would have been continued to have been paid, and they would have had the flexibility to stay home while they continued to be paid for the duration of the crisis.
And it would have cost the government about the same.
Right, exactly. And I think that would have been a much better solution.
Hmm. You point out in your piece in the American Prospect that those loan recipients who got smaller loans is a part of the story that really needs more attention. There were some thousands of businesses in California alone that got less than $1,000 through the PPP. Some got less than $100 and some got $1.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. And one caution that we have to have here is apparently a lot of this data on this spreadsheet that all these media reports went off was erroneous. So there are companies on this spreadsheet that said, we never applied for a loan, we never got a loan, and somehow we're on this list saying that we took this money. So we need to get to the bottom of that and understand why the Small Business Administration, that had one job to just come up with a list of who got loans, couldn't even do that, and how many errors there are on there. It's an indefinite amount at this point. I suspect that some of those $1 numbers are also errors. But it's clear that a lot of people got very small loans, and a lot of people got less from the bank than they asked for. And this seems like another function of banks sort of picking and choosing who they wanted to deal with and not really following the spirit of the program. I mean, the program kept changing every day. There were new guidelines, new ways of looking at it, and I think it led to a lot of confusion. But I think it's more important to look at those smaller banks. We don't know the names of them, the smaller businesses, but we need to know. I don't think any minority tracking information has been on those. We need to know how many African-American, Asian, Latino businesses actually were able to get help. We need to know how many small businesses didn't get what they asked for and why. We need to know whether this actually helped keep these businesses in business. And so there's very much that's undisclosed. And when we just go off and say, hey, Kanye West Company got money, and hey, the Ayn Rand Foundation got money. It's funny, but does it really tell you whether this program works or not? I question that. I think the bigger problem is smaller businesses not necessarily getting what they needed, and all this money left over in the system when we're told that there's all this need out there from small businesses. Why is there $140 billion left unused from this program if the intention was Congress to get it all out so that people didn't lose their jobs? I just think we're looking at the wrong questions.
As an aside on the mistakes that have already been shown in those databases that were released, it's not surprising, I think, because this was put together by a government agency. We see the economic stimulus checks that Americans were supposed to be receiving. Many have received them, but there's still tons of people who haven't received them and don't know why they haven't received them, myself among them. And it really goes to show the incompetence of this government. Dead people have received checks. People living abroad have received checks who aren't even U.S. citizens. And then living U.S. citizens haven't received them. But to your question of why there's all this money still left over in the program, and so many of us, even personally, can probably name small businesses in our own communities that are in trouble, that are, you know, having crowdfunding campaigns in order to stay open. Do you think it's because they applied for these through the big banks and were turned down, or they didn't have the ability to apply? Can they go to another bank if they were turned down by one bank?
Yes, they can. I mean, I think the larger banks have essentially wiped their hands of this program even before there was a deadline. It just got extended to August 8th. So there's still time to get this money out. But there was a deadline of June 30th that passed, and then they extended it. Weeks before then, banks like Wells Fargo had basically said, we're not accepting any more applications. And so the other problem was that it was in the incentive of the banks to have a pre-existing relationship with a particular company. And when you're talking about small businesses, that includes sole proprietors who might not have a business relationship, a business banking relationship. You might do it through their personal accounts or whatever. And so a lot of people just didn't have those links to banking, that access to enable them. And then others were, you know, I talked to people who speak English as a second language and just had a lot of trouble understanding the program, whether it would work for them, and how to get banks to walk them through it. So there were a lot of hurdles and obstacles. And what this really sort of signifies is that we have a very poor relationship and ability in the government to get relief out to individuals and smaller businesses. We have a really good delivery system for giant corporations. It's called the Federal Reserve, you know, changes a number on a spreadsheet and bang, you have money. We have a very bad system for delivering checks to individuals, as you mentioned. And we have a bad system with the Small Business Administration, which was known as one of the worst agencies in the entire federal government even before the coronavirus crisis. So that's the core problem that we have to understand, that we've hollowed out government, outsourced its functions so much, privatized so many parts of it, that it can't function as well. And we have to address that.
What about the fact that there were several members of Congress whose companies received loans, Kushner companies and Trump-linked donors, if they actually used that money, turned it, you know, and in the way that allowed it to be turned into grants, even if it saved jobs, wasn't this a conflict of interest?
Well, I mean, because it was run through private banks, I'm not sure what the mechanism is of corruption here. Is it that a congressman called the Small Business Administration to tell a private bank to make a loan, most of the loans which they made anyway, to get that congressman's business funded? I mean, I think it's just generally when you're talking about Kushner company or a congressman or people that have certain connections, they're just more sophisticated people and are more have more relationships with banking and financial interests. So they were able to work the system to their advantage.
They have power and money and influence, and they use that power, yeah, money and influence to get more power, money and influence.
But I think I don't think it's political power and influence. Mm. I think it's just general coziness with the structures of the financial industry. So that's a somewhat different thing. But here's the problem that exists when we start pointing out these things and saying, this company was undeserving and this company wasn't. Right now, we're deciding whether to do another stimulus program, right? And what I'm hearing is that the highlights, this sort of witch hunt that's been done on the PPP has made members of Congress think, we're going to have to limit relief in the future because it's we're getting too much political pressure that we're giving away favors. And so that has a tangible effect. If before these stories, we were going to give out another $300 billion to help the small business sector, and now, because of these stories, we're going to give out $100 billion, and it's going to be extremely targeted, and you're going to have to show that you really suffered and that you have no all these strings attached, and there's going to be a lot of bureaucratic hassle. That's a tangible effect. That means fewer businesses and, more important, fewer workers are going to be helped by relief that is absolutely needed. We have this giant wave of cases that is going on right now that's going to have an undeniable economic impact. So that's what I'm concerned about, that this, you know, reporting this without context ends up leading to a situation where we get this artificial austerity because, somebody somewhere is getting something they're not. And if you believe in universal programs like I do, and like I think you might, you don't want to be put in this situation where, this is the kind of thing conservatives do. They say, oh, that person didn't deserve the welfare. And so we have to target the program to make sure they deserve it. We don't want to, on the left, be put in that situation.
I think this stems from a misunderstanding about what the loans were going to, because all people see is that, wealthy investors sit on boards of companies that got loans rather than companies that employ low-wage workers or workers in general, mid-level wage workers even got loans, to see those loans connected to the wages of Americans rather than seeing them connected to the to the compensation packages of CEOs. Certainly it's natural to feel outrage, and I felt it too for that
reason. It's a difficult situation, Sonali, and I agree with you. And I mean, certainly there were some companies in there that shouldn't have been in there, or that it's hilarious and hypocritical for Grover Norquist's company to take federal money when he spent his entire life railing against public spending as the root of all evil. So, we can talk about that, but we have to give the context, and we have to understand that the problem here was outsourcing this whole program to private banks. That was the real core problem. And it wasn't, if you want to get this money out fast and help as many people as possible, there were going to be these situations of people taking advantage, human nature being what it is. But we shouldn't hold that against the entire program and force it to shrink in the future and force federal relief to shrink as well.
Well, David, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. We'll have you back on in just a few weeks to talk about your book that's about to be published, A Monopolized Life in the Age of Corporate Power. It's going to be out by New Press. Thank you so much for your work.
All right. Thank you.
My guest has been David Dayan. He's the executive editor of The American Prospect. His earlier book was Chain of Title, How Three Ordinary Americans Uncovered Wall Street's Great Foreclosure Fraud. We've been discussing his latest article in The Prospect called The PPP Witch Hunt is Misplaced. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupatsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.